Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy radio show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yes, indeed. That means that we get to do three more practices before we get together again. Makes Monday such an exciting day.
Exactly so. Exactly so. Well, we could look at what was exciting about yesterday in the assignment.
Oh, yes. Let's do that.
I would rather feel compassion than know the meaning of it. What a clear encouragement to get out of the head and get into the heart. A very good way to practice that movement is to experiment with acting on what drops in as compassionate thoughts, words, and deeds, so we can feel how they feel. As we become more familiar with how compassion feels, we can turn attention to that feeling of compassion and realize compassion is feeling the feeling of compassion. Today, explore how compassion feels and record and listen.
Beautiful, huh?
Hmm. Well, here's our first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Phil.
Hey,
oh, hi, Phil.
Hi. Well, let's see. Pump's not quite primed yet here. But
you weren't expecting that voice to say you're unmuted, huh?
Not right away, no, anyhow. But I love that part, you know, compassion feels like compassion.
Yes, and compassion can feel compassion, feeling compassion.
Yeah, that's the most amazing thing about the whole thing, because and it's all the same, you know, love feels love, and let's, you know, it's all just keeps going like that. And with these kind of feelings, it's not like, you know, the negative feelings just have their feeling and then you just drop. These just keep on, like those mirrors, you know, they just keep going back and back and back, where compassion just gets stronger or something. Yeah.
So it's a variation on our Quaker Oats box, right, where the guy on the box is holding the box with the guy on the box holding the box into infinity.
Yes. And, you know, here's to me what keeps dropping in, I guess, around these is that, okay, I make the intention to be compassionate. All right, today this is, you know, make compassion.
That's what we're doing today.
That's what we're doing today. So we're practicing along, and I love it because, of course, the whole point, the only way we can get to being compassionate is to be present. And then, of course, it's all there. And that's what's so wonderful. You know, the compassion just arises then when compassion arises, love arises, gratitude either arises or drops in, you know, whatever circuit it's making. And it's just all there in that one moment. And it can be anything. Compassion can be, I've noticed it has, as we like to say now, a lot of flavors. There's a lot of variations on compassion, and I think several different ones dropped in yesterday for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what you're pointing at is so fun to explore, because we get to that place, and this is a subtle one but a fun one. So there's a person present, and so. Is the compassion different from present? Is kindness different from compassion? Is gratitude, love, are they, which comes first? And so we find ourselves in that wonderful Zen position of, in order to try to figure that out, we have to leave the experience.
Yes.
So we quickly get to the place of, I don't care.
Right, and I think that was my overall that I've thing I've been looking at for a while now during these days. And here's what it is. It's so in the mornings I make all these intentions. I mean, I don't even make them. They're just part of my, well, I do my morning, you know, either morning prayer, morning recitations, you know, they're all there. How we want to live our life. And then for the most part, I go about my day. Because the very last intention for me is, in a sense, that, okay, life, you know how, you know, I want to live, and so now live me, kind of. Because
what do I need here, right? Because what's going to happen is now for me, this is my intention, now life is going to offer me all the support that I need for realizing that intention.
Right, and whatever drops in, because whatever in my path is it. So then there's that, and then there's within those there's these, you know, practices we do during to try to, I think probably mostly ferret conditioning out, you know, to have it come up and show its head. And but what conditioning can do, and this is the thing which I think is kind of is interesting, is that it can get in there if we're not watching, or for me anyhow, if I'm not really paying attention, and start me wanting to try to be compassionate or kind. You know what I mean? And that's a whole different, because then it can come up and say behind me, after it said that, and after maybe I didn't live up to its standard, it can say, you didn't make it. You didn't do it. And so that's why it's because I can see it when it does that. And that's why we have to pay attention, because if we don't see it, we'll fall for it. But you know, I can see when it happens if I'm there, and then it doesn't have an effect. But if I don't, it does. You know, it'll
and then
I have to catch it on the rebound. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the place where we say egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is going to do its best to use everything
itself. It does.
And it just so happens that for itself winds up being against us. So whatever practices we're doing, it's going to try to take them over in a way that will benefit it. And I don't even think that there's any, I don't believe there's any intention of harming us. That's not, you know, that's not the motivation. The motivation is to get the energy for itself. And we can all kind of sympathize with that, because we know what it's like when we're identified with it. And we don't really care. Now, if somebody said, do you not care about anybody else? We'd probably jump back in horror. Of course I care about. But when I'm identified with ego, it never occurs to me that there's anybody else.
Right?
So it's not like I'm not caring about them, or I do care about them, or they just don't exist. Because the only thing that exists for me as ego is getting what I want.
Yeah, what ego wants, ego gets, you know, that kind of thing. So anyhow, it really shows it's all a game, you know, point one for it, point, you know. And then it does become very interesting and it's fun, you know, even when ego's...
It is.
It doesn't it feel is. Fun because we're identified. We know deep down it's all right. One for
the game it. Itself. The game itself is fun and very exciting.
It is. It is exciting. Yeah. And this is, I think these morning, you know, things we're doing now, the show and everything that you and Ashwini are, you know, doing with us is really just bringing it out, bringing it there, and having our practice stand so much out in front. It's just great. It really is.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah.
Deep
All right. Well, thank you so much, Phil. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Phil. Sherry, I actually got
dropped off the call. So, funny enough, I didn't follow very much of that conversation, except that lovely...
Well, it was good.
Go ahead. It was. the part that really resonated for me is that experience of compassion, feeling compassion. And
yeah.
that it's just that image that you were offering of the Quaker Oats box, and the image that dropped in for me is the experiment that we do in all physics laboratories, right? You put the candle in the middle and mirrors on either side, and what you experience is the light in extending through infinity. And you might actually think that the light's in the mirror, but the light is the source. And so it experiences itself that way. Anyway,
it kind of leaves us in that place, right? It's kind
exactly.
of that, that's, huh? Big.
Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily from Seattle.
Hello, Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hi. I felt compassion yesterday in the form of a lot of gratitude and connection with Sangha. I've been feeling scared to call in this week, and it was so...
Tell us about that. What's going on with that?
Well, it was so upsetting to me because the week before, and I'd been getting in the queue and felt like I had really, nailed self-hate. Like, I figured out it was there and that how I could choose and make a choice, and I felt so empowered. And then this week I was scared, and I could see what was happening. I knew I was, and then I saw myself choosing not to get in the queue and going with that self-hate. And it was so discouraging to me to...
Emily, I so wish you had been with us last night. We were having a discussion at the monastery. We're on retreat at the monastery right now.
Uh-huh.
On this very subject.
Oh, really? Well,
and
I'll be there
what
next week.
A powerful place it is to be.
At that point of choice or realizing...
That's right.
That's right.
Because... So I'll do the abbreviated form. I don't know if we could. All the powers that be are on this call with us right now. So if I say, do you think we could get a copy of that recording to Emily? I bet everybody in the group would be fine with you having a copy of the recording. So I'll give you the abbreviated version. Okay.
Okay.
So in your life before, you were either here and present.
Mm-hmm.
You're here and present. We could say you're in the light room. You're fine. Or you're in the dark room and you're not fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's no awareness one of the other. When you're fine, you're just fine and everything is fine. And when you're not fine, you're not fine and nothing is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But where you were in this situation that is so powerful is that you were in awareness in between those two states. So you were able to see what would be possible for you if you were in the light room, and you were able to see how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate does to you what it does to you. So you're beginning, and it's a very specific place in practice, to be conscious. It's not that we're there. We're going in and out of these states all the time. But to have conscious awareness of it is what makes it extraordinary. Okay, so now you know what it feels like to be in awareness in between those two states that human beings live in constantly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Can you see the magnitude of that?
I see what you're saying, but in it, I felt like I know this place so well, and I know being in it, and I know self-hate so well, and here I am again.
That's right, and here you will be again, and there is nothing discouraging about it.
Okay.
That is the voice to stop believing. That is self-hate saying it's so discouraging that you're listening to self-hate again.
Oh, the discouragement.
Uh-huh. Hoping, because okay. the next movement after discouragement is quitting. Why don't you just give up?
Uh-huh.
It's so hopeless. You've been uh-huh. here so many times. You've been through this so many times. You're never going to get it. It's never going to be any different for you. Why don't you just give up? Okay, then the next stage for people who stupidly continue, is why don't you just kill yourself? Because that's mm-hmm. really the only way out for you. Okay, now, again, if we were in a room full of people who do practice, and I said that, and I said, now, anybody else ever have that experience, and everybody in the room would raise their hand.
Yeah.
Okay, so as we realize that, now what you're actually experiencing is the place in practice that you want to be. And the fact that you recognize that you are there regularly is a giant leap forward, because now that's the place you're going to be looking for. Now what you're doing is identifying with conscious, compassionate awareness rather than even the light room. Because just mm-hmm. to randomly fall into the light room and not know, you know, really where you are or how you got there or how to get back or any of those things is not that helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But now you're looking for that place of conscious awareness that can see both, and that's what enables you to choose. Last night we were just talking about it as to choose your heart, right? We could say to choose the light room or to choose conscious compassionate awareness or however we want to talk about that. It's all the same thing, right?
Yeah. That place of unwillingness of like thinking I'm not going to choose, or thinking I'm not willing.
That's right.
Sometimes
that is how you get to see what it feels like, what it is like when egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate has a person. That's what it feels like to be identified with ego. I don't want to.
I'm not willing.
I don't feel it. I'm not willing. And then self-hate just dumps on you, right? What kind of a person are you? I mean, you even know what's possible, and you're not choosing it.
Right.
Well, what's really going on there is it's got you. So that's where we stop. I just stopped. That's where we stop and go, okay, the devil has me. What does this feel like? What does it feel like in my body? What's going on emotionally? What are the thoughts? What am I projecting? What am I believing? Okay. Mm-hmm. So you just found that you've been thrown down a deep well, all right? Screaming is not going to help, all right? Well, maybe, but probably not, right? But what you have to do is recognize where you are so you can know what is the next step out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So yeah. And it's the hardest place. So we wrote a book, right, called I Don't Want to, I Don't Feel Like It, to try to get people to see that's not you. That is being taken over by the devil.
Yeah.
You know, the devil's in quotes, but by ego. So now you watch that. Oh, oh, okay, that's how ego does what it does. That's how it makes its case. That's how it gets me to believe I'm it. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I want to choose my heart. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't want to choose my heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was so nice when I got out of it yesterday on the call, and I just realized, I just had this moment where I realized, oh yeah, everyone feels like this. And
that's
that
right.
was my
that's
feeling
right.
of like connection. And I'm
yes.
really glad I'm coming on retreat next week. So I'm really
good.
Grateful to
good.
Have
and you'll be that
sangha,
much more ready.
Sangha in
that
person.
You'll be that much more ready because this is a process that you can now begin to watch happen constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. And we'll get that recording to you either
great.
Ahead of time or as you leave the retreat or whatever. And that way
okay.
you can really study it and watch it. You know, it's like
yeah.
I avoided physics classes, but as Ashwini points out, you know, that these processes are they're replicable. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. However, Himalayas, Caribbean. And so once we see that process, we can start attacking it like the scientific experiment that it is.
Yeah, and know what to do. Great. Mm-hmm. Sounds
all
good.
All right. Great.
Okay.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Emily.
Bye-bye.
And Sherry, that group from last night was Thursday group with you, so it is posted on the website or will be and available
oh, great.
To all modos.
Oh, great. All monthly donors get those. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Well, and just to pick up on the conversation, that conscious, I love the word conscious compassionate awareness because that's, mm-hmm. that sort of describes exactly that place that you were talking about, which is the conscious awareness in a place of being with whatever is going on. And something that I've been watching in my surrender workshop is that life also demands us to accept that awakening is a process of identification as a way of moving past that.
Yes. Yes.
Right? We have
yes.
to drop
it's
the
not
idea
a mistake.
That, yes, we have to drop the idea that getting identified, even getting identified is a problem. There's nothing
right.
wrong with that too.
Yes.
Also, or whatever,
yeah.
whatever that
yeah.
word is.
Yeah, well, right. If I'm going to, you know, whatever sport it is, if I started and I thought every time I hit a golf ball it doesn't go in the hole, then I'm making a mistake. No, that's not going to be my sport, you know, or whatever it is that we do, that belief that learning is a mistake, learning, mm-hmm. there's something wrong with learning, Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or being tested at different in different circumstances and getting the opportunity to hone a skill.
Yes. And life is good at pop quizzes.
Yeah, and it's nothing to do with me. That's mm-hmm. the whole point. It's got nothing to do with me, within quotes. I'm not mm-hmm. the author of circumstances or experiences, and that's what we're surrendering.
Yes. Yeah, that belief, that rigid belief in an I who is going to be able to get it right.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Joan.
Hello.
Hi. So I've been going exactly through the process that you all were talking about just now.
Wow.
And
it must be in the air.
Yeah.
Right?
And,
it's just what's
and,
going on in the universe.
Yeah. And even to the point of thinking of quitting. And but I'm wondering, I have been fighting a bug for the last 7 days. Not quite getting sick, but I feel like my body is trying to, you know, get rid of this thing. And I noticed that I feel especially vulnerable to conditioning.
And oh, yes.
I'm wondering how you work with that, because, I mean, yesterday I managed to pick up the recorder and I had a very long session with the recorder. And but still feeling...
Well, let me ask you this. How are you taking care of yourself physically? Do I need to give you a lecture on the Huber Cure?
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Okay, then.
Maybe, yeah.
Lucky me, I get to. Okay. So I won't bore you with my deal with it, but I'll just tell you very, very quickly how it works. And that is, at the first sign of anything amiss with the body, you go to bed.
Oh.
At the first sign, go to bed. Now, if it has any kind of cold-type symptoms, then you, the whole routine is that you take a hot bath or a hot shower, you wrap yourself up. If you have a heating pad or that sort of thing, you put that in your bed, and you get hot and you sweat. Okay, and you just sweat it out of your body. Okay, if it doesn't have that component, then you just go to bed, and of course you go to bed with your recorder always, and you just stay there. You stay there until you feel 110% well.
Oh wow! Okay, boy, that is really sharp conditioning.
Oh, almost nobody can do it. So, the people believe that, a cold lasts 2 weeks and that sort of thing. And the reason I'm convinced that stuff lasts so long is exactly the way people approach it. So you dope yourself up with a bunch of stuff so that you keep going until the body is so depleted that it has no choice but to collapse. Okay, and then as soon as you start feeling a little bit better, the voices kick in, and you get up and start doing stuff until the body is completely depleted. But if you will stop immediately and go to bed and feed yourself and drink lots of water and do all of those take care of yourself things and sleep as much as the body can possibly sleep, then it'll heal itself.
Mm-hmm. And what about the recorder? You said take the recorder to bed with you. So what do you...
Every time you wake up. Yeah, because medical folks will tell you that stress is the worst thing in the world for your immune system. Getting upset is terrible for the immune system. And so what does conditioning do when people get sick? Get you all upset.
Yeah.
Right? And so what you want to focus on while your body is healing is staying happy. That's the other thing that apparently folks are catching on to, is that happiness is the way to have the strongest body. Well, we could say, good, the immune system is, all of that sort of thing. So being in a good place, being with the mentor, doing gratitude, I love you recordings, enjoying, appreciating your body. You can make recordings of all of the parts of your body that seem to be working perfectly, aside from this, whatever it is that is the one symptom. I wish everybody would do it and report back how quickly they can move through an illness as compared to what they're up against when they put conditioning in charge of it and let conditioning run their body into the ground.
Maybe the Huber Cure needs to be on the website.
Yes, well, I think it's. I think I wrote a blog about it, and so I think that's where it is. But I lecture people on at the monastery. It's a requirement. If you get a symptom, you go to bed. And I live that. It happened to me just last week. I felt like I was coming down with something. I was perfectly fine at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, there was the first little twinge of a symptom. And I just closed everything up and went to bed. I slept for 3 hours, got up, and have felt fine ever since. But I know in my heart that had I kept going, I was going to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel the bug. You can feel the bug when it moves in, right?
Yeah.
And the body will move it out if you give it the support. So, and I hope everybody can see how all of this goes together, right? How this is actually the actualization of awareness practice.
Hmm. Okay. Well, for next time, because this time it's almost out of my, you know, completely out of my body. So for future reference.
Yeah. And you could do it now if you want to speed it out.
Okay.
Because, you know, Joan, the thing is, we talk about the body fighting something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my body is fighting. But actually, the body is kind of under attack, which is not necessarily – the ego is what's fighting.
Mm.
And so to give the body all of the resources that it needs to be well is
mm-hmm. –
it's a great gift.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty.
All right.
Thank
good.
You so much.
Thank you.
All righty.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Joan. I hope she does. I hope you do the Huber cure, Joan.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting to just deliver a lot of my favorite lectures here today. It's a happy day for me.
But it is true. It's an energy management process. And so if the energy can be available for the body to heal, then it's certainly not available to ego to feed it.
Exactly.
And so there's no wonder that it wants the energy.
Oh, yeah. And the thing about it, you know, being unwell. Now, you know, I mean, if you've just gotten a terminal diagnosis, then, you know, you've got a lot of emotional stuff that you're dealing with, which is why we want to practice up ahead of time for when things really are dire, okay? But if we're just talking about a little flu, a little cold, a little whatever it is, or a big one, I'm not saying, you know, only mild. You can be really sick with something. And it is a marvelous time to practice awareness. There's nothing else going on, right? You're just lying there. And so all of the attention and awareness is available for being present. And that's the most healing thing. Body, mind, spirit, emotions, presence heals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of another marvelous show, Sherry. It's way past the time, so I'm going to read the assignment.
All right. Thank you. I get wound up.
How far you go in life depends on your being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant of the weak and strong, because someday in life you will have been all of those. When we listen to conditioning, we believe there are some ways we are and other ways we're not. We're fooled because we're not paying attention. We're choosing beliefs over our experience. When we pay attention, we realize we're all those ways and more regularly. We can feel naive, depleted, energetic, ambitious, defeated, or capable in the course of a day. We recognize these states if we're present to what is, rather than to what we're being told. Today, take some time to sit down and consider the truth of that statement. Make a commitment to practice being tender, compassionate, and sympathetic with you, regardless of how you're feeling. Record and listen.
Hmm.
And
like
with
a good
that,
idea.
We'll see everyone on Monday.
Yeah. Go happy. Treasure yourself. Thank you, everybody. See you
Thank
soon.
Thank you, everyone. Take care, Sherry. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks, Ashwini. Bye-bye.